Hello. Welcome to Options Talk with OIC. I'm Joe Burgoyne, Director of Retail Marketing for the Options Industry Council, and I'll be your host for this podcast series. OIC was created in 1992 to educate investors and their financial advisors about the benefits and risks of exchange-traded equity options. We offer a variety of resources to those interested in learning more about options, including live seminars, webcasts, and podcasts. Here are a couple ways to stay in touch. You can like the OIC page on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at options_EDU, and join our group OIC on LinkedIn. Today, we are going to close out our three-part series on options SKU with a discussion about some of the different types of SKU that are out there for the investors to consider. But before we get started, let me state that options involve risk and are not suitable for all investors. You should not enter into an options transaction until you have read and understood the risk disclosure document, characteristics and risks of standardized options. This brochure is available by visiting www.optionseducation.org or by calling 1-888-OPTIONS. To keep things simple, commissions, fees, margin interest, and taxes have not been included in the examples used in this podcast. These costs will impact the outcome of all stock and options transactions and must be considered prior to entering into any transactions. Consult your tax advisor about any potential tax consequences. None of the information presented in this podcast should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell a security or to provide investment advice. So let's start our discussion by welcoming back, once again, Steve Meisinger, Director of Education at the International Securities Exchange. Steve, thanks so much for returning yet one more time.
It's great to be here, Joe.
Now, Steve, we've spent the last couple of shows talking about what is options SKU and what is volatility's role in all of that. Today, I'd like to focus on some examples of the various types of options SKUs. Can you give us your thoughts to get us started?
Sure, Joe. If you think about the SKU, there are different categories. So one would be options smile. Options smile, we look at it graphically, it describes lower at-the-money call and put volatilities, implied volatilities, relative to the out-of-the-money options. And so we get this smile where the out-of-the-money options have higher vols relative to the at-the-money options. That's what's called option smile.
Can you give me an example of, you know, the option smile?
Sure. Looking at implied volatilities, I might say that the at-the-money options might have a 20 implied volatility, but the out-of-the-money calls and puts might have a 25 implied volatility. So much higher implied volatilities mean more perceived risk or more variance volatility for those out-of-the-money options. Also, keep in mind, has a bit to do with leverage, as we've already discussed.
And we had discussed that before, and it was a little bit the theoretical models, the nominal value of the underlying option, those things all go into helping to create this skew and this smile. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. How about another type of skew?
Well, we have negative or downside skew. And this is prevalent in a lot of asset classes. The easiest one to look at is the broad indexes, large cap stocks typically will have downside skew. Believe it or not, this was not exhibited prior to the 1987 crash. We really had volatilities that were similar along all strike prices. The market woke up after 1987 and realized that there is a potential for more variance to the downside relative to the upside. The markets might actually move up slowly, but move down quickly. And that's why you get this downside or negative skew.
You know, that's interesting. We were both on the floor back in 87, and, you know, you get back to the model. And the models talk about no skew, but as you say, the marketplace and the dynamics of the marketplace help the market to define skew going forward.
That's right. You know, if you were smart enough, which I wish I could say I was, and I wasn't,
me
then
too.
I would have realized, right, Joe, we would have been better off during that difficult period to realize that the market might have, and we all recognize this now, that the market has the potential for more variance to the downside, at least in many asset classes, relative to the upside.
And is there any other type of skew?
There is a positive skew. And so, you know, wherever there's a negative, there's a positive. Got to be, right? Essentially, there is a positive skew Typically, it's in low-priced assets because if you think about it intuitively, the asset can't go below zero. So at some point, when it gets down in that single-digit number, people that are looking for limited risk, they might think, oh, wow, the proverbial sun will come out again for this asset, and they might want to buy some options, some call options, have limited risk. So that creates this tail to the upside, higher implied volatilities for the higher striked options. And that is the upside skew.
And that is more unusual.
That is much more unusual. But we, especially in the last couple of years, after the credit crisis, we saw a lot of assets that had upward skew because of the phenomenon I was just talking about.
Now, we've touched upon it a little bit, I think, over the last couple of weeks. But again, what drives these various skews?
We always get back to supply and demand. And so supply and demand is really going to be a huge factor in that. The preference for investors to sell out-of-the-money options to bring in income,
right?
That creates usually a tendency for those at-the-money and especially out-of-the-money options, calls, to be a little bit lower vols relative to the out-of-the-money put options. Remember, out-of-the-money put options, what do they give you? They give you insurance. They give you the ability, the buyer, the ability to potentially sell your stock at that strike price. In the event of a huge break in the market, you have limited risk. So we look at investors and they like that limited risk and they're willing to pay a bit more for it.
And therefore, you get this skew.
Right. Risk aversion creates the skew.
Okay. How important is it for investors to comprehend the option skew when considering different option strategies?
So important. Because when you open up your account, whoever broker you're trading at, and you look at the implied volatilities, someone that's new to options might say, oh, I get this. The implied volatility is this. I'm going to look for the highest implied volatility and sell that option. And that's really just a part of the story. The real story is the essence of risk. The idea is that you have to decide what kind of goals you're looking for, what kind of risk you're willing to tolerate, and then you could decide selling a put, buying a put, doing a vertical spread, calendar spread. But that all those factors really are decisions that you have to make based on the skew, but not just blindly buying an option because it's cheap or selling an option because it's expensive. The out-of-the-money options tend to have a lot more skew.
Okay, so is it fair to say you cannot generalize that it's good to buy low implied volatility options or sell high implied volatility options?
That's exactly right, Joe. In fact, I get this question so often in our evening seminars. Somebody will raise their hand and say, Steve, why don't I just buy low vol and sell high vol?
That's me asking that question out in the crowd.
And the answer is, yeah, what is low and what is high? We don't really know. I like to use the metaphor of a stock. You know, a stock might have been 30, and just because it went to 20 or 10 doesn't mean it couldn't go even lower. Taking it the reverse. Stock's trading at 30, then it goes to 40 or 50. That doesn't mean it couldn't go to 60 or 70 or 80. So we don't really know what is high and what is low, but what we do know is it helps us understand what the market expectations are at any one moment. And these market expectations are changing every day, and it's best measured by the implied vols.
Indeed they are. And that's really wonderful information for our listeners to keep in mind. Now, do certain of these option strategies fit into specific option skews?
Yes. When you think about a time skew, a vertical skew, you're really looking at what the market is expecting, and then they pay for that. If we're all trying to buy an option, what's going to happen? I think all the listeners would say, well, if we're all trying to buy an option at the same time, prices are going to rise.
Right.
If we're all trying to sell an option, prices are going to decline. So we as traders, investors, have to decide what kind of risk tolerance we're willing to take on, and then you would select the option strategy, whether it's a vertical spread or a calendar spread, but you look at the skew, and then you make your own judgment.
Okay, so with a quote-unquote standard skew, is there a particular strategy or two that an investor would, you know, generally move towards?
A lot of investors like to look at, for example, companies that are going to release earnings. and maybe the company is a fast grower. So if they're a fast grower, the earnings are a driver of potential change. Some investors like to look at trading calendar spreads. Why? Because the short-dated option, the one that's around earnings, tends to be a little bit more expensive because people are expecting more movement.
Right.
A calendar trader, someone that's going to buy the calendar, might say, I'll sell that option. But very few of us are just going to sell the option naked. I mean, there's a tremendous risk there. So how can we hedge it? A calendar spread where we're sort of trading time, and we're basically trading implied vol or the skew. And you'd be looking to take advantage of, hopefully, a convergence back to a more normal situation.
That sounds like a very good example. Now, on the flip side, are there particular option strategies that should not be used when we talk standard skew?
Yes. What we should really stay away from is selling options that seem to be overpriced and just selling them naked. I meet investors all the time that say, Steve, I have this strategy that works 99% of the time. If I sell this, look at the skew. I could sell this option for X cents. Why don't I just do that?
And that's my question. Why not just do that?
Because the risk reward, you might be taking in a couple of cents, but you might be losing multiple dollars. So an answer to that is just doing a credit spread.
Well, what if, okay, the credit spread, rather than just selling naked and options naked? Because you said taking a couple cents. What if you take in a couple dollars selling options naked?
Of course, that's great, except a couple of dollars means that the market's viewing it even more risky.
Okay.
So again, I would, being in the markets for so many years, I say to myself, oh, how can I hedge this? I might think that the option's expensive, but I need to think, and what if I'm wrong? And I can't always think, what if I'm right? But what if I'm wrong? How can I hedge it?
Now, the way then to approach it might be with a spread strategy, the credit spread in this particular example.
Yeah, the credit spread, you can sell an option that you think is far out of the money, and maybe the asset in your mind will never go down to that level if it's a put, or up to that level if it's a call. But you might want to do a credit spread because you limit your risk. Very important for traders.
Spread being the key.
Absolutely.
Okay, fantastic.
Limiting risk.
Well, I think as we wrap up this three-part series on options skew, I'd like to ask you finally, is there a last point or comment you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Yes. You can't blindly say, should I trade with the skew or against the skew? Because it's almost like if you think about going, you're driving down the highway, there are many ways to get from point A to point B. Same thing when you're trading options. Many ways to be successful. You don't want to just do one kind of trade, whether it's selling expensive options, buying cheap options. You need to think that the market is dynamic. There's a reason why the market is pricing in certain expectations. You look at the expectations of the market, then you make some assessments based on risk, try to limit your risk, very important, and then hopefully you implement the strategy. You also think about what if you're wrong and how you might actually alter your strategy, because you can. You know, when you're trading options, you don't have to wait till expiration. You can change your mind and close the position out, either at a profit or a loss.
Amen. And you said the markets are dynamic, and it speaks just to that point. The markets are dynamic, and your ability as an investor to make decisions in and out of particular trades and strategies needs to be dynamic as well.
Exactly. The stubborn trader, in my opinion, tends to be the one that doesn't do as well as someone that is willing to change their mind, willing to alter their positions. You don't have to change your mind every 3 seconds, but you have to recognize that sometimes you're going to be wrong and you want to maybe close your position out or alter it.
A very, very good thing for our listeners to keep in mind, Steve. Well, that's it for our show today. I want to once again thank Steve Meisinger for joining us on this three-part series on options skew. Along with his duties at the ISE, Steve is one of our OIC instructors. You can check him out on the seminar circuit. In the meantime, if you ever wanted to talk to an options professional, call our help desk at 1-888-OPTIONS. They're there for you 5 days a week to help you answer any of your options-related questions. Don't forget to check out our website at www.optionseducation.org. We've got online courses, webcasts, and of course, Options Talk with OIC podcasts that will help you to increase your understanding of options. You have a topic that you would like us to feature on an upcoming show? Then email us at options@theocc.com. Lastly, don't forget about the social links we provided at the beginning of this show. You can like the OIC page on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or join us on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening, and remember, a little options education goes a long way.